What's up, everybody? I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I have the Bridge to Bitcoin guys in person while I was in London. We got to sit down at a great restaurant that serves amazing steaks, beer, whatever, and you can get it with Bitcoin. So we had an amazing conversation about all the work they're doing. But as always, ladies and gentlemen, please remember that this is not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast, strictly the opinion of the Bridge to Bitcoin fellas and myself. Also, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Let your boys, your girls know about the show. Share it all around. And big shout out to my new sponsor. If you're looking to connect with people in the Bitcoin space, you can check the number one app, and that is the Orange Pill app. So the Orange Pill app allows you to essentially connect with Bitcoiners, shoot them a message from all walks of life in a close proximity. And if you use the link in my show notes, you will get 10,000 sats. That is right, 10,000 sats immediately when you sign up. So use that link in my show notes and you get 10,000 sats, and you get to meet up with other Bitcoiners. It sounds like a win-win to me, so go ahead and hit that link. Also, shout out to the Bitcoin Advisor. If you're looking to get your Bitcoin off an exchange, you definitely should. Hit me up at content.thebitcoinadvisor.com/greencandle to set an appointment directly with me, and you can get that Bitcoin off an exchange. And lastly, Hodler's Official. That's HODLERS official.com. You can get the number one Bitcoin jerseys in the game with 10% off promo code GreenCandle. Y'all know the drill by now. All right, now let's get into the show. Whoosh.
Bong. That's how I start every episode. But we are live here from L'Atelier from here in Southwest London, which they accept Bitcoin. So if you're in the London area, you should come down here to eat, and they have a great meetup that we're going to attend to later. But I got Christopher and James over here from Bridge to Bitcoin. And so they've been gracious hosts, showing me around, telling me where to go. I did get a little lost. So they brought the mic and waited on me. So I really appreciate that. But we were talking about a little bit before pre-show. The FOMC meeting minutes are coming out later today. You know, I'm a dumb American over here. So tell me what you guys think about what we're doing over there in America as far as like the Fed, FOMC, you know, Powell and his crazy thing. Let's get into it. What do you guys think about inflation? Is it done? Are we in stagflation? Is it running rampant? All right, I'll leave it to that.
Cool. I'm going to hand the mic over to James. James is the suit today.
Yeah.
Inflation is inherent, in my view, to the system that we've got. So we've got a debt-based system with debt getting out of control. Inflation is going to be there. If you try and kill it, then you'll kill the economy. So one way or another, you've just got this balancing act. And the ability to pull off that balancing act is rapidly running out. So the detail of exactly who does what at any particular moment in time in terms of central banks, whether that's in America, in Europe or in Britain, it's kind of secondary. The big picture is the road's running out, in my view. So, yeah, OK, they'll lower interest rates, but what will happen? You know, inflation will pick up. They'll keep them the same. Inflation might stay where it is, but then the economy will start to fall and debt costs stay high for the government. One way or another, that seems to me, I think Lawrence Lepard says this a lot, there's really no way out. Greg Foss as well, they both come out with this stuff. And you know, that is how the system works. And there's too much debt now. If we could rewind it all the way back to 1971 and start again, then we have 50 years to go without it being a disaster. But unfortunately, we can't go back. So the only way is a dead end. So I really, my honest view is I don't care really what FOMC says. I think far too many people spend far too much time and energy worrying about that. But that's because they're sitting inside a system where that's the main thing that drives everything. And I just don't really want to spend too much time in my life thinking about it anymore. I used to.
Yeah.
So I worked in financial services, but now I'm with Bitcoin. I don't I don't really want to spend too much time thinking about it. I don't know if that helps. But...
You know, no, I mean, it's yeah, because it's interesting, right? Because like they, you know, Powell has kind of come out and said it at this point, right? He got on the 60 Minutes interview. He said, like, essentially, we're killing the later generations. There's basically no way out, right? So it's interesting to me that they're actually starting to admit this, right? I mean, like you said, if you go back to 1971, they had this 2% inflation target, right? With the thought that we would get 2% more efficient every year, which, you know, I mean, maybe you do 1 year, but compounding over years, that's not going to happen, right? I mean, you're going to have like a generation come in, a newer generation come in the workforce and one leave. And, you know, and then you're going to have people get complacent too. So it's a very, like, I guess, interesting problem that we're, you know, obviously Bitcoin kind of fixes that theoretically in a Bitcoin denominated space. But in the current system that we're at, how do you guys think that we get to a Bitcoin standard? Because I kind of see two different paths. So I kind of like to play this thought experiment with some people, right? Because even if you don't care about the current system, we're still in it, right? So I see kind of two ways. The first way being death and destruction almost, right? Like whole system as it stands goes to shit and everything kind of breaks and collapses. And then it's like, okay, we got to build everything up from the rubble, right? Or we have this slow transaction, our slow transition over. And I kind of feel like because of your name, Bridge to Bitcoin, I feel like I kind of know what you guys are going to say here, but I think there's going to be some sort of slow transition over where, you know, you're going to slowly onboard some businesses. And then eventually, you know, it's kind of like the El Salvador situation where government's going to wake up and be like, okay, legal tender in every country kind of around the world. So yeah, I'll leave it at that. Where do you guys kind of see this going to get to a full Bitcoin standard?
Well, I guess from my personal opinion is I'm probably less bullish than most. I'm bullish about Bitcoin overall, but I think that transition to a hyper Bitcoinized world that all Bitcoiners want to see, I think is going to take a lot longer. And I think that's because the inherent systems that are in place at the moment, I think they're going to get dragged out for a lot longer than I think people imagine they will be. It's really interesting when Bitcoiners start their rabbit hole journey, it's like their eyes are suddenly opened wide and they go, oh my God, this system's going to collapse. But this system's been going on for decades. And I have no doubt that those in charge will continue to make sure this carries on going for as long. So, for instance, my kids are growing up with Bitcoin. My kids are the only kids at school that know about Bitcoin. The other kids have no idea. So they're teaching them. So even my kids, it's still a new fandangled thing. So that point at which Bitcoin is ubiquitous, I think, is many years away, almost generations away, because those who are in charge and in power now, they've got no incentive. Those boomers, you know, they're fine. They're fine, Jack. And so was their kids. And probably their kids after, without Bitcoin. I think it's a slower transition than most Bitcoiners would probably like. That's what I'm imagining. Go on, James.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd focus. I've been thinking more recently, rather than about the speed, and I would tend to agree with you. Although I prefer it to be slower on the grounds that I think it could be less dramatic, right? Yeah. And I think if it's faster, it could be more dramatic. I've been thinking about how does it work. So I always used to think that it would be the bottom up, but I'm starting to sort of think now that this idea is the middle out, that there's a sort of sense in which the middle classes who have wealth are the place where savings is really comes from and where savings really matters. And I think that looking at Bitcoin as the asset as opposed to the medium of exchange, so the store of value as opposed to medium exchange, I think that that could be actually more of a driver. And when we look at in the developing world, a smaller proportion of the population are able to do savings, they're more focused on medium of exchanges that mean their salary is still worth what it was at the beginning of the month. At the end of the month, they don't have to buy bricks or disposable nappies or diapers for guys over the pond. And so I'm thinking about this middle out. So the sort of the more advanced of the developing countries, and then in the middle classes in the developing world, and there's a store of value driving in the end the publicity and the awareness of this technology that then leads on to businesses being asked, well, do you accept Bitcoin? You know, now that I've got $100,000 worth of it saved, I'd like to be able to come out to a restaurant like this and take my family out. So there's that middle out. And then there's another perspective, if you don't mind, or
of course,
which is what does that mean for me personally? How do I personally respond to this journey? So I think that look after myself, so make sure that I am solvent and I'm not dependent on the state, that I'm not going to be a burden to anyone else around me. Look after my family. And then consider whether it's the rapid situation or the slower situation, what's that going to mean for my community, for my region, for my country, and then for the world in that order? And what actions could I be taking? How could I be directing and prioritizing my time to mitigate the consequences of that transition? Because if we haven't got governments anymore providing whatever level of healthcare or education, we can debate how bad governments are at doing this stuff, but they do some of it, they do provide some welfare. How are we going to replace that? I don't just want to see everybody starving out on the street or suddenly switched over to, no, this is self-sovereign world. Sorry, you've got to look after yourself, right? What can we do to build those community support networks? And I'm particularly myself thinking of through churches and religious communities, but it doesn't need to be religious linked. But we need to have mechanisms for replacing those centralized sources of wealth distribution and bringing it back to a more decentralized local community level. So for me, that's my personal drive now, whether that's onboarding businesses or whether that's helping make sure we've got resilient community organizations.
That's a great point, right? Because I think it is very interesting, the aspect that you brought up, right? Because every single Bitcoiner kind of goes through their own journey, right? But Bitcoin is about self-sovereignty, but the community aspect of it is very important, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you can only be self-sovereign to a certain extent, right? I mean, like, you could be a jack of all trades, but a master of none, right? I mean, like, you probably need like a plumber, you need probably a dentist, you need like other people in your community to help, right? You can't just do it all yourself, a farmer, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of other things that, you know, would make a community. And because, you know, we have towns and cities and everything like that, it's advantageous to get everybody kind of on a Bitcoin standard. And I think, you know, the communities that are already kind of like creeping ahead, I think, like, you know, kind of spearheading that is very, you know, inspiring. And I think that's people caring about their community should not go away when they go to the Bitcoin kind of world. And I see it in the same kind of way as you guys do as well, like very slowly, right? I mean, Parker Lewis is one that says like gradually, then suddenly. I still think we're like a little bit away from that suddenly part, because I think, you know, we have a little bit more, I guess, politicized in the U.S. maybe than you guys are here. I don't really know the climate as much, but I know, you know, the U.S. election is coming up. We had Robert Kennedy kind of come in and say they want to back the dollar with hard assets, whether that's Bitcoin, real estate, gold, like a combination of those things. I see that kind of being the transition of the current government's trying something, most likely probably failing, but trying something and kind of getting away, because like you've lined out, the current, I guess, first world doesn't necessarily need Bitcoin yet. They have those assets, and inflation raises that up. The place it hurts is the younger generation, and then the ones after that, and the ones after that. So it's either going to be like, you know, people are handing down their houses from generation to generation until they degrade to the point where people can't afford to fix them, or you know, we kind of get to a point where, like, yeah, that kind of, I guess, American dream. I don't know if, you know, how feasible it is. here in the UK, but to buy the first home is just kind of out of the picture. And we're getting close to that point right now in America too. So as much as, you know, America runs the world, quote unquote, with the, I guess, what is it? The, currency, the world reserve currency.
The dollar, the dollar.
The dollar. The dollar. I mean, I don't know. I've been wandering all around London right now, like half directionized. Maybe it's this tea. Maybe you guys put something in it here at this point. But as much as, like, you know, America thinks that the world revolves around them, right? Everything kind of plays off of that. So I think, you know, to get to a Bitcoin standard, it's going to be a long, long journey. I don't know necessarily how we're going to get there, but I think it's like an interesting kind of thought experiment. And so that brings me to kind of what you guys do with Bridge to Bitcoin. So you guys onboard a lot of businesses, local communities, right? I mean, starting here in London, we're at a great restaurant here. So shout out to them for hosting us that accepts Bitcoin. But what is that conversation like as time's gone on? Like, tell us a little bit about Bridge to Bitcoin when you guys started, and like how that conversation with business owners to accept Bitcoin has developed over time, because I think it's probably gotten easier with inflation, but I'd like to hear from what you guys, your perspective.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. I'll start that off then. So when did we form? We formed, it's about 2 years ago now, isn't it, James? And there were three of us that started it off. So myself, James and Simon, our co-founder, can't be here with us today because he's fiat mining. We met essentially through Peter McCormack, another podcaster. Peter, as some of your listeners might know, he bought a football club, or a soccer club, as you might call it, correctly called the football club, though.
It's soccer.
And three votes on that.
You're in England.
Yeah, I'm going to lose that vote today.
So he bought a football club about 2.5 years ago, and shortly after he bought it, myself, James and Simon all decided, we didn't know each other yet, but we thought, oh, we'd go along to this football club and support Peter. And we rocked up. There were about 20 people at this football match, and 10 of them were Bitcoiners. And 5 of those were Simon, his wife and his 3 daughters. So it was really early days. We got chatting, realized we had some common values. And one of those common values is we all wanted to live on a Bitcoin circular economy. So rather than go back into our own local communities and onboard businesses in silo, we thought, actually, we've got some quite complementary skill sets. Why don't we team up together and let's form Bridge to Bitcoin? So my background is, my relevant background, I wear a few hats, but I do a little bit of business angel investing. James will talk about his background. Simon is hands-on technically, and he's also our community lead, if you like. So we touched on community and how important that is. And that's essentially our secret sauce with Bridge to Bitcoin. So a lot of people think Bridge to Bitcoin is a tech company and we sell our technical solution. Maybe we've got a point of sale machine. Actually, we're a consultancy. So we take all the global Bitcoin merchant solutions and have them in our basket. So if a new solution gets created, it instantly goes in our basket. And what we do is we speak to businesses who are interested, and this is the key bit, not interested in Bitcoin, but interested in increasing their footfall and revenue. So that's our sort of starting point. Do you want to increase footfall and revenue? And normally businesses, if they're mildly good at business, will say, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I'd like
no brainer, right?
Yeah, of course. And if they say yes, we go, great. Okay, we have this untapped customer base. They're called Bitcoiners. They will go to your business and spend their currency if you accept it. And they go, oh, what's this currency? And it's Bitcoin. And quite often they will say, oh, I don't know anything about Bitcoin, or I'm not interested in Bitcoin. And if they're not interested in Bitcoin, hopefully they are, we can tell them about Bitcoin. But if they're not, there are solutions on the market that enable Bitcoin to be flipped at point of sale into local currency. Now, I get a lot of heat when I say that, because I do get Bitcoiners say to me, well, you're onboarding these businesses, but they're flipping it into the local currency. So what's the point of that? I might as well go to any other business. And there are two is it our business to be querying what they do with the Bitcoin? I mean, we talk about privacy and self-sovereignty, and that's sort of part of one of the Bitcoin ethos. But if they are flipping it into local currency, what they are doing is they're still providing us with a Bitcoin circular economy. They're also adding to the Bitcoin and Lightning liquidity. So they're helping the network. But inevitably what happens is when Bitcoiners turn up at their restaurant or their cafe or their shop, they get curious and they go, wow, these Bitcoiners, this catchment area is huge. Mm-hmm. These Bitcoiners are coming from miles and miles away. They're my best customers. They're so enthusiastic. Yeah. They like walk in.
The most loyal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
And then they tip me like more than the other customers. And they're so happy. No one comes into my shop and go, hey, do you accept dollars? Yeah, you accept US dollars. I'm so excited. But Bitcoiners go, yeah. Can I record? Can I post a video on Twitter? Yeah. So they're the most loyal customers business owners have ever seen. And they love it. And inevitably that leads them to the edge of the rabbit hole. And so what we often see is those businesses who are flipping into local currency come back to us and go, ah, can I keep the Bitcoin? And we go, yes. So it's the start of the Bitcoin journey, if you like. And they're helping us by helping us to live in Bitcoin standard. I could carry on rambling.
No, I mean, that's great. Yeah, I mean, it's to that point, too, I think, like, that's one of the advantages of the Lightning Network, right? I mean, I think that's a selling point in itself, where it's saying, like, hey, you know, because my parents are small business owners.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with inflation, with costs going up for any business,
yeah,
if you could cut out that 3% fee, that Visa, MasterCard, and then like 7 or 8% fee that American Express charges.
Yeah.
I mean, that's helping a business out in itself. So I think, like, from my perspective, even the Lightning Network is like kind of like a beacon of light for the small businesses. And in America and here and all over the world, you don't want to be like in, you know, just going to places and seeing a Subway, a Pizza yeah. Hut, like only these big chains. Like, I want to come to these local hidden gem yeah. restaurants and get a flavor mm-hmm. of the town. And I think that's what adds stuff to communities. Yeah. You don't want to live yeah. in like cardboard box, like every city's the same with the same places. So that's kind of my view on like yeah. the Lightning Network and everything in itself too. Like, but I get your point, you yeah. know, like some of the Bitcoiners want to spend the Bitcoin, want them to hold it. But at the end of the day, you got to pay some bills too, probably in fiat, yeah. unfortunately at this stance. But
so I'm going to pick up a couple of things there, because the fee thing crops up quite a bit. And a lot of people think that's a main reason for businesses to accept Bitcoin. They go, oh, well, the fees are cheaper. We just got to go backwards a little bit and look at your customer base. So your normal customer base is going to carry on spending in fiat. So as a business owner, we're not asking business owners to orange pill. Business owners are busy enough trying to balance the books, managing stock, managing staff. If we come along and go, right, start accepting Bitcoin, try and convert all your customers into Bitcoin and get them to pay in Bitcoin, they're going to go, What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So what we say is this is Bitcoin is an untapped customer base. Your normal customers will carry on paying as they are. It's just your new customers, your Bitcoiners, that's where you see the fee saving. But this is additional revenue. So I guess if I was a business owner of a restaurant, I'd be like, well, do you know what? This is all extra revenue for free. Do you know, I'd happily pay it 5%.
Yeah,
because, you know, this is money for nothing. But as it so happens, as you say, the Lightning Network, the fees are almost zero, or sometimes they are zero. Mm. So the fee thing's technically correct, but I think it's not until we get to a hyper Bitcoinized world do we actually see that fee argument come into play.
That's
so it's interesting. It comes up a lot, and I kind of reel people back and go, if we went down that line, we'd soon have
Yeah, so it's essentially just free marketing then, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, which makes a lot of sense too. And I mean, you know, every business would benefit from that too. So,
and there's a couple of additional features on top of the fees. But fundamentally, what Chris is saying there is completely right.
Here we
it's
go,
not, it's not the main story. And the other things are it's instant. So it's virtually instant, the transfer. It's final settlement. And there are no chargebacks. So, you know, you say your folks are running a small business, people come in with credit cards occasionally, I'm sure they get called by the business, say that was a fraudulent transaction, or you were taking the money off you. Of course, the goods are long gone, or whatever service it was they provided is done. So the small merchants left holding the, you know, holding the baby basically. So so that can't happen with Lightning or Bitcoin, you know. So you know, so you make the payment, you get the money, and that's a final transaction. And there's no, I mean, if the person happened to have access to someone else's Lightning wallet, if they're a, you know, a criminal, that's not your problem as a merchant.
Yeah, I got you. That makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, we've gotten into his background here, the venture capitalist who's not wearing a suit. let's hear about the suits background over here.
These angel investors. So I'm an accountant. I worked.
There we go. That's the suit. There we go. I'm giving you a hard time.
No, it's fair enough. So I worked in the city, actually, in financial services for 20 years, about half of which time I was in the city, and in a large institution in financial services. The fact I was an accountant happened because it was a large corporation, and I ended up doing that training. I ended up really running finance systems. So I sort of 1 foot in IT and 1 foot in finance. Interestingly, I remember seeing ten plus years ago, more than that, actually, probably a dozen years ago, in the Gartner quadrants of business intelligence, because BI was one of the areas that I looked at, enterprise planning, business intelligence analytics. I remember MicroStrategy, this company.
Who?
MicroStrategy. No one had ever heard of it. But outside Bitcoin, nobody's still aware of it. But no, there was this little company. We never bought their software and implemented it. But I was, oddly, that's one thing that ties my past with my future is MicroStrategy. So it was very interesting in August 2020, was it? When they first sort of, Michael Saylor first started talking about
it. Yeah, shout out to Michael Saylor. Yeah, I've been trying to come up with a good nickname for him to try to get it going. I'm like Hard Money Mike, Magic Internet Money Mike, something like that. We got to get something going for him because I think he does a lot for this space just exactly what you're lining out here. So, but go on.
Yeah, so that was my background. I just got a chance to kind of take an early retirement. And did that in 2020, and I started doing a research master's in finance and accounting, and I thought I'd do a little bit of study research in some of the areas that I'd worked in over many years, as I say, business intelligence, analytics, enterprise planning, that sort of stuff. But then I did the 101 course, and the 101 course was how to choose your research subject, and you needed to be interested in it, otherwise you wouldn't put the effort in, you wouldn't enjoy it. And they said do a sort of brain dump of the things you're interested in and then just see if anything emerges. So I wrote down finance, personal finance, computer science, mathematics, economics, and I kind of studied it. And I apologize, I hope this is the only time I'll use this word today, but as I stared at it, because I knew nothing at the time, so forgive me, I stared at it and I went, oh, cryptocurrencies. That would be interesting. Sorry.
No, I mean, it's perfectly fine because, look, I don't know how much you guys know about me or my background or anything, but it was like somewhat of a similar story. And I think majority of Bitcoin are shitcoin first, you know, right, before they kind of got down the rabbit hole. And I think...
Brendan, he didn't, though.
He's
a pure one.
Well, I did my initial proposal, my draft proposal for my research MSc was talking about crypto. But then as soon as I'd started doing any reading, I went back to the supervisor and said, can I change it and read Bitcoin?
There we go. Hey,
so I did. I mean, I never bought any, but I did kind of
good go for you.
It. Intellectually, I went through that process.
Okay. So you went down the the rabbit hole of research and kind of doing that. And that's how you found Bitcoin.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess I'll have to tell you a little bit about my story. I was driving Uber in grad school. So, I mean, I was, you know, a broke college kid. I was looking ways to find more extra beer money for the weekends. And so I read an article on Bitcoin and they're like, it's going to go up. And I'm like, all right, I'll buy a little bit. I bought it on Robinhood too. And at that time, you couldn't pull it off.
Which year was this?
It was like 20. I went to grad school from 2016 to 2018. So okay. Sometime in there. And then I read an article about Dogecoin too, and both of them went up. But I remember I remember this vividly, is I was driving Uber and I was listening to We Study Billionaires, Preston Pish, a shout out to him. Yeah. It was before he had the Bitcoin only show. He had Plan B on and Saif Edeen on back to back weeks. Honestly, at that time, Plan B spoke to me a little bit more because he's like, hey, like this is going to go up. Like, you know, it's all about this. Like I kind of say to a lot of people, you come in for the money and you stay for the money. Because it's the hard money principles, right? Yeah. Like you kind of like come in for the number go up and then you stay for the hard money. Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, the end of way around. But yeah, so I remember that and I was trading it a little bit, not very much money because I was a broke college kid. But I remember sitting there and being like, I don't know what it is about this Bitcoin thing. I just have a feeling that I'm going to regret selling this a little bit. And that's when I started to dig into it. And then when I got my first big boy job in December 2018, that's when I started buying. And so, yeah, you know, good for you for not shitcoining. But I unfortunately went down that rabbit hole a little bit. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners did. And a lot of Bitcoiners give the shitcoiners a lot of hard times now. Yeah. And I mean, I get the toxicity because you don't want to feed into the, you know, the marketing tactics of all these like crooks that are, I mean, there's, you know, crooks that are stealing like from people that are running these pump and dump schemes and a lot of scammers. So I get it why Bitcoiners are toxic against that. It's just at a certain point, you got to take a step back and realize a lot of us probably hit that point at some point in time, unfortunately. So when it comes to like onboarding businesses, how do you, I guess, differentiate between Bitcoin and crypto then?
So we don't touch crypto.
No, but I'm saying if they ask you like, hey, I want to accept, or if they say, well, I don't understand crypto, do you go through that conversation and say,
if they're open for the conversation about Bitcoin,
you got to read the person.
So every conversation is different to a certain degree. So if they open up that conversation, we'll explain the differences between crypto and Bitcoin, how Bitcoin sits on its own, and the fundamentals that make it different and why we then don't touch crypto.
Yeah.
So that's quite an easy one. You quite enjoy that conversation, don't you, James?
Yes.
When we're often at trade shows. So we'll pitch up, we'll have a booth at a hospitality trade show and we'll literally pitch our tent there and we'll go, right, okay, then let's
pitch see if we tent. Can. Well, in America, that means something else.
I can guess what that means. So we'll pitch our booth.
There we go.
So we'll pitch our booth up, and we'll literally just grab business owners as they walk past.
Okay.
And they're complete newbies to Bitcoin, and we'll go down that extra footfall and extra revenue route. And yeah, if they want to go down and have that conversation and do a deeper dive about Bitcoin, great.
But
ultimately, our first step is, would you like more footfall, more revenue? And hopefully they say yes. And then they get curious about Bitcoin and we teach them about Bitcoin. We go, we don't have to do a big deep dive on Bitcoin now. All you have to do is start accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll fall down that rabbit hole and you can learn more as you go. Because it's a journey, as you say.
Oh, yeah.
And I completely agree with you in terms of most Bitcoiners get their fingers burnt. And I think it's a process that, like children. So I've got children. And you kind of need to let them hurt themselves to a certain degree, just a little bit, but you got to let them burn the fringes of their fingers on the stove. Just don't fall in the oven and lock the door behind you. So, and then you learn from your mistakes. So it's inevitable, I think, that people are going to get a little bit burnt, or majority, unless you're James, going to get a little bit burnt. But yeah, I completely understand where the Maxis are coming from. Just not too harsh, guys, because most of us have been there and most of us have learned our lesson. And we go, I know what they were talking about. I get it. I was an idiot.
And I think, you know, it was only luck that I missed it. It was just the process by which I, and also, you know, I was in my early 50s and I'd got 20 years in sort of financial services and accounting. And given that I was able to get over the fact that I thought I understood what money was. So, just a little bit of humility, and okay, I'll take the credit for a little bit of humility. Apart from that, it was just luck about the process that I had to be going through. In any other circumstance, I could have been equally the same. You know, it just wasn't
hey, man, you got to give yourself some credit. Don't take it away from you. I mean,
the only credit is that, because normally what happens, an awful lot of people I work with, you know, bankers and people I work with, you know, they are adamant still against it because they think that they know what money is, which is a reasonable thing if you've worked in the industry for 20, 30 years and, you know, you're an accountant, you're a banker, you're an actuary.
You think that you've lived in this system, yeah, right? Like exactly like you're saying that there's no alternative, yeah, right? I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, like, cause I, you know, I talk to a lot of people in traditional finance space too, that are very anti-Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And I like to talk to them about, you know, the overall macro environment, but 90% of the time, I don't even really touch Bitcoin with them because they all have an opinion on it, yeah, and there's no turning them on that point, yeah, but they know I have Bitcoin related content. So if they have I'm just leaving it the door open where if they have a question about it, hopefully eventually they come to it, to me about it, or maybe they go to a local meetup. So yeah, that like kind of leads me into what we got going on here later. The local meetup you guys got here, the UK meetup scene, I've been kind of bouncing around a lot in London and actually like meeting up with some Bitcoiners, and you guys have been very friendly and very welcoming. So I really appreciate that. But tell me a little bit about the UK Bitcoin scene, because it seems a little different than any other country, because you guys mentioned the Real Bedford team, which I'm actually, by the time this comes out, I'm going to be guest announcing the game on Saturday.
Cool.
So I'll be out there. And then, you know, Bitcoin Racing too down here. Yeah. So shout out to them. So a lot of like kind of sports ways, yeah, of marketing to Bitcoiners. And then you guys also have your arm as well. So tell me a little bit about the UK scene and how you guys are seeing that develop over time as well.
Yeah, it's rocketing, isn't
it? So when Chris was saying when we met, which is a couple of years ago, at the time, our third partner, Simon, he had set up a local meetup group in his area of the country in Northamptonshire. So let's say there were 10 or so about a couple of years ago. A couple of days ago, just in preparation for this, we just said, Simon, what's the latest data? And that's 2 years ago. And he said, we've got 63 meetups now in the UK. So we've gone, wow, from about 10 to 63 mm-hmm. in 2 years, right? So when Bitcoin was 13 years old, definitely some big growth there. We had our first sort of major Bitcoin conference in October 22, was it, up in Edinburgh?
Yeah.
There's another conference, a mini conference happening in Nottingham at the end of March. So that's a kind of mini conference, a bit similar to the one that's happening at Real Bedford, sort of similar angle, a few speakers. Again, at a football club as well.
Interesting.
A football club called, yeah, Colton FC. Just south of
Colton Town.
They take Bitcoin there, obviously, and you can buy every week. They take Bitcoin for the tickets and the program, and for drinks and snacks. Mm-hmm. So, and for general merchandise. So another football club, and there is a third football club as well at Oxford City. Also take. So I just thought, just on your sports element, yeah, throw all of those things in. You know, there's three football clubs in England that are taking Bitcoin now. Anyway, so what are you going to say?
And I think from the perspective of how Bitcoin is growing in the UK. So from a bridge to Bitcoin perspective, our secret sauce is the communities, because as I said earlier, we're essentially a marketing consultancy. So we'll come across a business and they'll say, oh yeah, I've been accepting Bitcoin since 2012. Yeah, and wow, I've had like two customers. I said, okay, well, what did you do? And I'll say, oh, I stuck a sticker on the door. And? Yeah. Well, no one came. So, well, that's because all you did was stick a sticker on the door. You need to go and speak to that customer base. And that's what we do. So that's why what Simon does with Bitcoin Events UK, he set up this hub, if you like. We can then connect with those local meetups directly and say, right, we've got this pub in Wiltshire. We just met them at this trade show. Mm-hmm. They've just started accepting Bitcoin. Go have your local meetup there next month.
Yeah.
And inevitably, because their Bitcoin psychopaths, they go, yay, let's do it. And they'll go down there, and this pub will have an extra 10, 20 customers out of nowhere pop up. And as I said earlier, be extremely grateful. And so that's the really important, that's our secret sauce, if you like, to be able to tap into those communities and take them to businesses. And it sows the seed for those for those business owners, because they go, there's this really interesting scene going on here.
Yeah.
And it helps them sort of get towards the edge of the rabbit hole. But also from a sort of Bitcoiner's perspective, meetups are really important from the perspective of, I'm sure it's happened to you, because this seems to have happened to so many Bitcoiners. Being a Bitcoiner is quite lonely at the beginning. Being hoodwinked here? Is this really happening? Because I haven't met anyone in real life. Well, I'm just speaking to this hodler person on Twitter. Exactly. I'm not sure if it's a guy, a girl, a child. I don't know who. Is it a bot? But when new Bitcoiners or Bitcoiners who haven't met other Bitcoiners in real life go to their first meetup, it's like gold dust. You see the weight fall off their shoulders and suddenly they go, oh, it's real. And you're speaking my language. You can see sort of the relief. And also it's really interesting because you kind of see the super networking effect. So when Bitcoiners step into the meet space of Bitcoin, suddenly this beautiful spider effect happens and people pull them in. I think it's because of the way Bitcoiners work. They go, what do you do in the fiat world? We need that skill. I need that. Can I pay you in Bitcoin? And suddenly the super network effect happens and it's wonderful. So it's important for me from a personal perspective for Bitcoiners to get out there and meet other Bitcoiners, because it also strengthens your resolve with Bitcoin, meet other Bitcoiners, but also from a merchant perspective, because it really helps drive numbers, because we can go to business owners and say, oh yeah, there's this meetup group in X city.
Yeah.
They have 60 members and they meet up every month or every 2 weeks, and we'll drive that customer base to you. So really important from the soul, for the soul, and really important as well for some hard data.
Yeah, no, I think 100%. And I think like just kind of like the Bitcoin nature, right, is to be almost like entrepreneurial, you know, like almost like you said, you're kind of like self-sovereign, like by yourself in this world, right? But I think the aspect of the community is extremely important. And once people find those, you know, Bitcoin communities, that's where, you know, a lot of people feel connected to people of all different ages, all different, you know, ethnicities, all that kind of thing, right? I think that like really brings us all together. And, you know, you guys mentioned it already, and I mentioned it at the beginning too, but the sports aspect, I think, is extremely interesting here, because in the US, right, I mean, we had crypto.com arena for like the NBA, FTX arena and for the NBA. So we had a lot of these like shitcoin companies come in and kind of run it. Yeah. But it seems like in the UK, it's been pure Bitcoin, at least from what I can tell. All right. Well, but there is pure Bitcoin teams, right? So tell me a little bit about that. Has there been a lot of like, I mean, you gave me the reaction already. So there has been some shitcoin teams. So talk a little bit about that and how there's, I guess, becoming like some successful just Bitcoin only teams. Cause I checked the standings today. Real Bedford is at the top of their standing in their league. So shout out to them too.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't generally like, you know, being negative, but I think that if you looked at Premiership sponsors, you know, Premier League soccer, football, however you want to call it, you know, and you looked at their sponsors over the last few years, and you know, you'd pick out some obvious, shitcoin stuff. I think that, I mean, the clubs that we're talking about are pretty small. I mean, Carlton Town, I mean, is even smaller than...
They're non-league as well.
Yeah.
They're like Real Bedford.
So, you know, these are tiny clubs that in some ways are potentially would have been or are, you know, struggling to keep their heads above water, and finding that extra little niche is just making the difference to give them some extra success. I mean, in Real Bedford's case, it's a bit more than that, because obviously they've got Pete McCormack.
Yeah.
He's got that marketing spread across the world. Then he can bring in scale of sponsors that a little club like that would never, ever see in any other circumstance. Just one thing, though, one point I'd like to make is both Carlton FC. Carlton Town. And also Letelier here. And this sheds some light on how Bridge to Bitcoin, how we really work. Neither of those two were brought on to accepting Bitcoin by us, by Bridge to Bitcoin. They were both, you know, really great local Bitcoiners. One of the, you know, one of those guys you'll see here tonight. And I'm not going to name them, obviously, on the podcast. Another guy up in Nottingham who's also key to organising this mini conference up there. So one of the things that I think we'd say that we really are as well is a kind of knowledge resource where, you know, we've created, you know, leaflets and pens, mm-hmm. and we've got a website with a map on it.
Yeah, great stuff sort of we got stuff, here. Yeah. We'll show them for the camera for those who are watching on YouTube.
And actually, that was a global open source project before we came along, that those particular leaflets, and we just took that on Figma, and we just created, it was a Bitcoin for every, you know, for like consumers, for retail, Bitcoin. And we discovered this Figma project online, this sort of open source shared project. We just took it on the UK rail and we created a merchant version of it. And now other people have taken that into other countries and developed it, have taken that merchant version, developed it in other countries. So even... in London, in the centre. So we do that, but we're far from the only people. Mm. You'll find in all of these communities around the country that Chris was talking about, not only are they going to the pubs and the restaurants that start accepting Bitcoin, but they're individuals who also taking it upon themselves in their community to go around actually onboarding people. And if they've got questions, yeah, of course, we're there to help. You know, we're not trying to do it ourselves or anything. We're just trying to spread the knowledge.
Yeah.
So that's...
And I think that's a great thing about Bitcoiners, right? Yeah. It's a lot of things is like open source, right? Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, this, you guys, you know, maybe you got it from somebody else, but it, you know, it's helping onboard other people with Bitcoin. So, you know, it's like kind of like, you know, my first Bitcoin in El Salvador, where they have a lot of, you know, educational stuff, but they're saying, hey, we're taking this fully open source. So if you want to do this wherever you're at, go for it.
Yeah.
And I know you guys do a little bit of stuff like that, education stuff around that aspect of things. So let's dive into that, the education aspect of not only like onboarding businesses, but do you guys do it with people like in the meetup scene? Like, how does that kind of work? Let's dive into that structure.
Well, we do education and so much, just linking, going backwards a little bit in terms of we share our strategy with everyone or anyone who wants to use it or know about it. So, for instance, Madeira is a good example. Mm-hmm. So when Andre Loha announced and his team announced the Bitcoin Atlantis conference, I immediately was just like, right, guys, you've got half a dozen businesses on Madeira that accept Bitcoin. You're expecting 5,000 Bitcoiners to turn up. You need some more Bitcoin accepting merchants.
Yeah.
So we had a call with Andre, and I said, we'll come over if you want and help you. We'll show you can see us in person, but we don't speak the language. And he said, we need someone on the ground. I said, ideally, yes. So he assigned us a guy called Charlie over in Madeira, and poor Charlie got thrown in at the deep end. So Andre just went, okay, this is Charlie, set up a Zoom call. And we went, right, Charlie, this is how we do it. This is our strategy. And he was like, oh, wow. Okay. Are you good? And he went, I think so. Okay, come back. If you had any questions, it's all open source. Let us know how you're getting on. You know, give us some feedback as well, positive, negative. And all credit to Charlie. He's taken the strategy and he's absolutely running wild with it. So I don't know how many businesses he's onboarded in the space of, what, 3-4 months, but he's on fire. And that's a really good example of sort of spreading our education from a sort of onboarding merchant perspective. We share our model and any ideas we have globally as well as the UK. So bring it back in a sort of more micro level. So you mentioned it, James. So this restaurant was onboarded by a guy called on Twitter. He's Hashley Giles. So all credit to Hashley. All we did was get them over the line right at the end. So essentially, I think Hashley called us or sent me a message, said up. We're getting some Bitcoiners down tonight, but we're having a few technical problems. And we're like, no worries, Ashley, I'll come down. Met up with the owner, went, right, okay, then tweak this, tweak that, right, you're good to go. So like, we had, just to reiterate what James was saying, a minor part to play. And that's great because we don't really want that ownership. We want that open sourceness where if people have questions, Wait, we'll happily answer them, but if you can do it all yourself.
Well, frankly, there's no money in it anyway, is there? So why not share it? It's like a lot of things in Bitcoin. You're doing it because you want to see the results, not because you're actually going to benefit financially. No. So it's like there is no incentive in many ways to do it all ourselves.
True.
That's the real thing about it.
But
I was digressing down the merchant side. So, but education. So do you want to talk a little bit about educating maybe at a...
With me, cool. Premier, with yeah, me Premier Bitcoin, yeah. So I'm one of the first qualified, certified, maybe teachers of, in the UK in the Me Premier Bitcoin UK node. So we set up a UK node because, as you say, it's a decentralized. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to have this big hierarchy going back to El Salvador. So every country can set up a node if they want, and there's a teacher. Just southeast of London in Kent, and he teaches in a grammar school there, and he'd started running the Me Premier course in his school as a sort of an enrichment course, and then Bitcoin Policy UK said, well, you know, maybe we should do a UK node, and so he's ended up being the kind of, if you like, he's not formally leading it, but he's been the knowledge lead, if you like, because he's actually a teacher who's been teaching it in a school. And a couple of months ago, myself as a volunteer parent and two or three other actual secondary and primary school teachers in the UK, we went through the course with him and got sort of, and then the test that you have to do with Me Premier Bitcoin to kind of get the badge to say you're competent to teach this course. So I'm actually one of the first people in that, and I'm currently teaching it every Saturday out of a pub near me in Reading, where they take Bitcoin. And 10 o'clock in the morning every Saturday, I'm there with a projector and a screen. And if anyone wants to show up, I'm taking them through about 12 lessons to gain the diploma, the Bitcoin diploma. I'm also about to start doing that in my daughter's school.
Awesome.
With years 10 and 12. So that's, what is it, about 14, 15 and 16, 17. Yeah, those are the age group.
10th to 12th grade. Okay.
Years old. So 14 to 15 year olds and the 16, 17.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
To give them an enrichment course, then that'll be the Me Premier course.
Gotcha. Understood.
And I think you and Simon are
in cohort number two.
Yeah.
And yeah, just to pick up on that. So that's the idea behind Me Premier. And it's UK Bitcoin Policy UK who are helping drive that as well to a certain degree. And help.
It's a sort of badge of connection, I suppose.
And they're doing a fantastic job, and we'll come back to them. But I think that's the idea behind it, is that trying to implement it into schools, so dropping it in as an extracurricular activity. Mm-hmm. And I think we can share Huxley is his name on Twitter. Yeah. So Huxley's doing a great job with that, and a couple of other guys as well. And that's really exciting because we're seeing it being drip fed into schools, not as a part of the curriculum, but as an extracurricular activity. So that's really exciting that we're seeing that slowly coming in there. And then there's a bit of an education that was sort of, we want to talk about some education pieces, maybe at a corporate level.
Yeah. So I'm part of a group of people who are also then linking it back to my background in sort of,
the suit.
Sometimes the suit just has to come out.
You had to bust it out today. You had to look fresh, you know.
I'm working with a group of other guys, someone else in England, someone in Canada, in Ireland, and in the States, and also El Salvador, back to the Me Premier guys.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working with them and developing a Me Premier Bitcoin for corporates, so a sort of business angle on this education. And that's because it starts from a position of, I think that large corporations need to get a grip on this, right? If you're a large corporation and you don't have Bitcoin on your risk register, then I think you are failing in your duties, and if you're going to get it on your risk register, here's a new technology. Show them some graphs of things that have been happening yeah, okay, you go, it's 15 years old, but I could talk about, well, look at the number of meetup groups, look at the number of businesses that are starting to accept it, look at its long-term value growth, all of these things. This thing, if this thing carries on like this, this is going to be transformational for a lot of industries, a lot of markets, a lot of products. It's going to develop all sorts of other opportunities. Have you got it on your risk register so that you can monitor the threats, so you can develop any mitigations, and also that you can develop opportunities for your business? And this is the question, and I know the answer, but I want to go out there and ask the question, because I know that the answer in many cases is no. In most cases, in almost all cases, the answer is no, it's not on our risk register. Right? Mm-hmm. But it absolutely must be, I reckon, is the thing. It must be on your risk register. And then that means you need someone in your organization, at least one person who is capable of looking at the implications. What will the impacts of this be? How can we mitigate that? What do I think the likelihood of that happening is? What sort of timeframes do I think it is? And like, sitting outside those businesses, can't give businesses those answers. It's only the people within the business, in the risk department, the finance department, in the marketing, whichever department was, who know their business and how they operate and what their plans are for the future. But they need to combine that with some knowledge of Bitcoin so that they can properly position the business to resist or to mitigate the threats and to develop opportunities. And that means that they need to get some of those risk people and some of those finance people, if they, no one knows about Bitcoin, they need to get them on something like a MePremier for business, for corporates course, which won't be quite the same as the one that you do for the communities and for regular retail. A little slightly more corporate focus, assume a little bit more knowledge, and maybe also have some special courses within it that focus on, I don't know, banking or energy or maybe some operational things, you know, the marketing department or payroll, or mm-hmm. you know, so some various topics that, if they're particularly interested in certain areas, we've developed some of that stuff that they can just take off the shelf and kind of customize their course a little bit. But we're doing that with MPB.
Yeah.
So,
and I think, you know, to be honest, I think majority of businesses are going to start to turn some heads when Michael Saylor probably becomes like the richest man in the world.
Yeah.
Right?
When again, the S&P 500. Yeah.
That starts to happen, right? MicroStrategy starts to become like one of the top, market cap, one of the top companies in the world by market cap because of how much Bitcoin they hold. When people start to see those things, they're going to be like, okay. Because I think, you know, the narrative, maybe even like just a year ago at this point, maybe even a little bit longer, year and a half, was when MicroStrategy was dumping all TradFi was like, Bitcoin is going to go under 20K and MicroStrategy is going to fail. And it kind of scared some people away initially. And I don't think, you know, you still don't see too many people talking about Bitcoin, even though it's at the 50K price. But we all know kind of how it goes during a bull run, right? Where a lot, that's when people are going to start to come in and start to pay attention. As much as Bitcoiners don't want to talk about the price, we all love it when the price. let's be honest here. Right?
Well, you two know what it feels like. I don't yet. Although I did get in 2020 and I bought a little bit to help me, you know, just to get a feel for it. I was doing my research MSc. It was like in the sense of, it's a bit like, if I make the analogy of surfing a wave, like I was already being rolled over by the wave. While you were having your first ride, I was like, I'm not going to be able to get this. It's getting away from me. Yeah, so this will be my first, like, okay, I've got a position I'm happy with.
When I was first starting to get in, right, so I started buying like December 2018. Yeah. It was like, so it was basically like 2019 I was buying, and then the COVID crash happened. Like, I was buying a little bit every paycheck, and then I saw it go from like 8 to 12, kind of. And then it crashed to 4.
Those were the days.
I mean, it sounds great now, right? Yeah. It sounds great now. But at the time, I was like, oh, shit, maybe I was wrong about this. I don't know. But then I was like, all right, it's my first job. I guess I'm going to put my nuts on the table here. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I got a lot of time to make
up
for it.
Yeah, still young. Yeah.
So that was kind of my, like, I guess, lucky, you know, young ignorance in a sense where it's like, all right, I guess if I make a mistake, I'm young. So I can make up for it. But if I'm right, I'm going to be a bit happy. So it's like, maybe I'm right. I don't know. But
it's interesting what you say about how heads will turn when Michael Saylor becomes, you know, one of the wealthiest men in the globe. And, you know, when Bitcoin hits a certain point in price point, that is, yes, heads will turn, but what I find really interesting in the UK is what James has been talking about. And that essentially, I'll boil down to touch points. We're having loads of touch points being created in the meantime, in the background. This is what I love about the Bitcoin community, is that we got everyone's doing their bit in their own little way, creating touch points. So we talked about education in schools through Marie Premier. We talked about corporate education, onboarding merchants, you know, people just onboarding friends and family. So this is what I love. These little touch points are being created. And that's what I'm really looking forward to, is when Bitcoin's ubiquitous. Not necessarily when, you know, Bitcoin hits 100K. Yeah, that'd be great. You know, we all can't wait. But when my kids turn around and their friends go, yeah, I know about Bitcoin. Why are we talking about Bitcoin? What's there's nothing we know about Bitcoin. You know, that's kind of when I feel we'll be closer to winning, if you like. And so that's what I love in the UK. All these little bubbling pots that are happening at ground level. It's really interesting. It's really fascinating.
No, 100%. And I agree with you there too, because I mean, as much as like, all right, I talk about getting in like somewhat early, like I remember this vividly. But the first time I heard about Bitcoin was in 2012, right? So, I mean, at this time I was a freshman in college. I came back and all my friends were going to my buddy's birthday. Was coincidentally the day the Mayans said the world was going to end, right? It was like December 21st, 2020 or 2012 or something like that. And you know, what do you do when you're a freshman in college and all your buddies are back home? You go get wasted, right? So my buddies were at a frat in the University of Texas. And one of my friends was like, yeah, man, I don't know. Somebody just came and talked to us about this Bitcoin thing. It's the future. I'm like, really, man, that's cool. It's the last we spoke about. We got wasted, just getting drunk and just forgetting about it. And then I saw him like years later. I was like, you know, man, like that story kind of stuck out to me. Did you ever buy any? He's like, yeah, just haven't gotten around to it. I'm like, buddy, it's been 10 years. Like, what have you been doing? He's like, I don't know. Like, you know, and so now I'm the crazy Bitcoin guy at my like old high school buddies and all my college friends, because they all just kind of didn't get the wherewithal to buy it at some point.
We'll get that second touch point.
Yeah.
That you did. Yeah.
But, you know, I got like, you know, it was that. And then there was a few other things I remember kind of popping up. And then it was the podcast. And then it was finally like, okay, I've heard about this enough. And it was years, right? I mean, if I would have bought it in 2012 when I first would have heard, even if I would have bought like $100 worth, it was probably like a dollar at that point. You know, it's like, man, but it's kind of that thing, right? Everybody gets Bitcoin at the price that they deserve. Yeah. It's enough of those touch points.
But do you know what? We're still early.
Oh,
still,
100%.
We're still early price-wise. We're still early adoption curve-wise. And I think it's really easy to have a go at ourselves personally. Just go, oh, man, if only I'd bought when I first heard about it. Mm-hmm. But we are still so early. I mean, this has got far to go.
Oh,
100%. Far to go. And it's fascinating with all these little pots bubbling away. I mean, I'm really excited for my kids' future.
Oh, yeah. Right?
You talked about earlier about communities and how important that is. And it's really interesting. If I try and project forward what's going on there, I think there's a really important, potentially a really important role that community leaders will be playing in the future, in terms of these community leaders, these Bitcoin meetup leaders, if you like, who have some Bitcoin, most of them, they will be potentially incredibly wealthy people, incredibly influential people. And it's fascinating, sort of double backing on what you were saying in terms of what role or responsibility they will have in the future. And I think as Bitcoiners, that's a fascinating sort of thought experiment.
Yeah.
You know, if you are a lord of the manor, suddenly you've transformed, your life is transformed, say 2 decades from now, you are wealthy beyond your wildest dreams. What are you going to do with that? Where are your responsibilities to those you got left behind?
Are you going to be buying the Lamborghinis, or are you going to be helping the people for whom the government's no longer able to help?
And that's
fascinating to see how that's going to play out, and how that sort of decentralized, I don't know what it's going to look like. So I'm not even going to speculate. Well, but
do you want to talk about the charity that we've set up? Because I think it's related.
You talk about it.
You guys are making my job easy.
Because I think that's kind of, that hails from that whole idea. So myself Chris and Simon have set up a charity in the UK, registered with the Charities Commission, so it's all above board, and it's you can donate to it tax deductibly and all the rest of it. I'm sure similar things
in the States. Yeah, real quick plug then, like, how would somebody do that? Do you guys have like a geyser fund, or is there some way, like a website?
So we're not quite at the point where we're ready to start accepting donations, because we're what's motivated us to do it. Okay, so what's motivated us to do it is that thinking about sustainably funding charities. Okay, so you've got charities out there, whether it's food banks or places where people go to, you know, when they're very ill, sorts to die, sort of respite homes, those sorts of things, maybe veterans charities, all those sorts of places in the community where they're raising funds to help with issues inside the community. The fiat mindset is about short-term ideas. So let's get some funding and we'll spend it all, and then we'll, you know, this week or this month or this year, and then we'll have no money again, and we've got to go and get some more money. So, but thinking in a more sort of long-term sustainable basis, we thought, well, what we really want to do is to be able to fund charities sustainably. So not provide that kind of sugar hit of a big lump of money, and then they find they need another sugar hit 6 months later, but to be able to create a financial structure that meant that if we started giving them small amounts of money, but every month, we could do that indefinitely. And so what we had this idea was that we could combine that Nakamoto portfolio theory that the guys have developed, whereby if we could get funds into Bitcoin, and then we would be able to sustainably give away a fiat valued amount, maybe in Bitcoin, maybe in fiat. I mean, but obviously we're going to try to encourage charities to mirror, to adopt what we're doing on our own balance sheet within this charity. But so the idea, for instance, is if we received $100 in either in dollars or in Bitcoin, doesn't matter. We would obviously, if it was in dollars, we'd convert it to Bitcoin. We're testing the proposition that we will be able to give away $1 a month forever. Okay, so the game is we get $100, we give away $1 a month forever, and that's because we hold it in Bitcoin. On average, we're just estimating conservatively, I think, that we're going to get a 12% return on that Bitcoin in the long term.
12%, that is bearish.
I know, it's very conservative. It's very, very conservative.
Well, hey,
but I think what we're trying to develop is this sustainable funding for good, so that we've got this kind of charities that get money that we donate to are able to, so we're not actually doing the charity work ourselves, so we're more like a trust.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, where we're, but our aim is to sustainably support charities, and then also to spread the methodology of our balance sheet management to those charities, perhaps encourage them to start accepting Bitcoin donations themselves. Then that ties exactly back into Bridge to Bitcoin, because a charity accepting Bitcoin is just like a business, really. It's just invoicing. It's a gift rather than an invoice. So
it's another touch point, isn't it? It's a touch point, but this time for charities.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
loads bubbling.
It's a touch point and everything's kind of interconnected.
Yeah.
But we haven't gone over these that have been sitting here this whole time. So I need to go over these Bitcoin cards, right? Because this could be a potential another touch point, right? So what we got here? We got like a psychopath, a hero Bitcoin, little hodler. I mean, it might be tough to see on this camera. Obviously, we're a little far away, but... tell us a little bit about these. What are these Bitcoin cards?
So these are, well, if we think of Bridge to Bitcoin as a sort of business-to-business business of what we do, we've developed these cards for our Bitcoin consumers, if you like, for the retail end of the market. So as Bitcoiners, we can go and spend our money at Bitcoin-accepting businesses. Most people will use their phones, scan in a QR code. When was it? Maybe coming up to a couple of years ago, Coin Corner came up. Well, they marketed the bulk card. So these are essentially bulk cards, but these bulk cards, or if I go backwards a little bit, Coin Corner released the bulk card. That's how they branded it, and we've gone along with that. A guy called Peter approached me shortly afterwards. This was shortly after we launched Bridge to Bitcoin, and said, can I borrow one of your point of sale machines? And I said, it's just a standard point of sale machine, but yes, you can. And he explained what he was doing. He said, right, these bolt cards that Coin Corner have released, they're really good. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to do an open source version that's self-sovereign and self-custodial. And that's what he wanted to see in the market rather. And I said, that's amazing. That's great. Yeah. Here's a point of sale machine. Play with it. And so I met up with him and he tested a couple of the Mark 1s and Mark 2s and they worked fine. He went, oh, wow, that it works. Look, I can see on the log it's working. I'm completely self-sovereign. I'm completely self-custodial. I've created a self-sovereign, self-custodial bolt card. I was like, great. Okay. Now what, Peter? He said, I don't know. I said, well, you got to tell the world. Okay. Well, someone, and he said, well, someone needs to make it open source. I said, Gandhi. Be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah, there you go.
And yeah, he picked up the baton, put it on an MIT license, so that's now open source. So he and a guy called Rob Clarkson started off Bolt Card. So I think it's at Bolt_card on Twitter. So that's the open source version of Bolt Card. And at that first meeting, Peter was explaining to me how Bolt Cards or NFC cards work in general, yeah. And he had this little thing that tests where the NFC field is. Unfortunately, I didn't bring one with me, but essentially it lights up when you're in the field. And he said it's really useful because smartphones have them and they're not always in the same place, so you can find where the field is. Mm-hmm. And he went, look, and it lit up. I went, wow, it lights up. I went, yeah, it's useful. I said, no, it's cool. That's mm-hmm. really cool. I said, huh, could you put that in a bolt card? And he went, yeah. I said, could you put two in a bolt card? He went, yeah, you can put as many as you like in a bolt card. Where are you going with this, Chris? I went, two lights in a bolt card? Yeah. What are Bitcoiners like? Laser eyes.
Oh,
and
he's yeah.
like, oh my God, laser eyes. I said, yeah, let's create some laser eyes bolt cards. And so these, when you tap and pay, they light up. You probably can't see the camera, but they light up.
Oh shit, that's awesome.
Yeah, when you tap and pay, the eyes light up or anything you want lights up. So we created these laserized bolt cards, and essentially we contact Bitcoin artists. So these are some of Lena's little hodlers. So we contacted her. She said, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Let's have some of my designs. And we've got a whole load of artists. Bitcoin Apex, he does the graphite drawings. I don't know if you come across him. So we've got a couple of his there.
Yeah.
And then we've got, who else have we got here? We've got a few others. So, yeah, check out our website. That's lasereyes.cards. So it's self-sovereign, self-custodial bolt card that lights up with laser eyes when you tap and pay. And it's great for the Bitcoin artists. Again, it creates touch points. So Bitcoin artists, what we do is we have a base price to produce the cards, but the artists can choose what price the card is sold for.
Oh, nice.
The base price, anything above the base price, is essentially their royalties.
Gotcha.
So they choose the price, and then they get every time a card sells, they get a certain percentage of the sales, and they choose it. So, yeah, it's a fantastic way of having some Bitcoin art and a fun way of spending your Bitcoin. It can be self-custodial and self-sovereign, or you can use a custodial service. So you can link it up to whatever you want, to your own node, to a custodial service like Coin Corner, and various degrees in between. So we ship them out, and then it's up to you how you use it.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff. I think that's where like the future is going, to be honest, when it comes to like a Bitcoin standard. I know we kind of talked about this a little earlier on, but I think when we get to the point where a normie doesn't know what's going on in the background and just tap the card similar to what we can do now, or even like integrate it where it's almost like Apple Pay, you know, kind of thing, where I'm sure that's coming soon, where you could connect your Bitcoin wallet or something like that and just tap to pay. And then that's just the ease. Cause like you said, the quicker that you can kind of go through, cause now, like, you know, unfortunately a lot of things, you got to go pull out your phone, you got to scan it, which Bitcoiners are perfectly fine to do that. But a normie is, you know, they're going to be like, true. What the hell is this? So I think that's where things are going. So that's awesome. So,
and it's interesting you say that it catches normies' eyes. So what we came to, and James actually led on this, but there aren't that many places to spend Bitcoin yet. So we still need to spend fiat.
Yeah.
So you've still got to use our fiat bank card. So we thought, well, how can we integrate what we're doing, laser eyes cards, with fiat? And James essentially, this is your idea, James. James said, well, why don't we essentially create a sleeve? So you take your fiat bank card, you slide it into a sleeve, and it looks like a Bitcoin bolt card.
There you go.
So when you go to an ordinary shop,
And there's that for the camera. It's got the Bitcoin logo on it. You go to tap and pay, and the Bitcoin logo lights up. Bitcoin is better. And James takes it a step further. So I just tap and pay, and it creates conversation. They go, "Huh? Did you just pay me in Bitcoin?" Well, James is a bit cheeky with it, aren't you?
I say I'd like to pay with Bitcoin, and I show them the card, and then it triggers a sort of, "Oh, I'm not sure we take Bitcoin, sir," or "I'll call the manager over." Oh, this is interesting.
Oh, man. You're there for the show.
Yeah. So funny. So then the manager will come out and James will go,
And then, let's have a go. Give it a go. Let's see. And then I tap and pay. And of course, it goes through and they're like,
what the hell?
And then
the man comes in and it's paying in Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's so funny. They go, "Oh, I guess we do accept Bitcoin." Yeah. You know, you can do what you like with it. So it's about creating another touch point.
Yeah.
Conversation about Bitcoin. You know, you can then have a merchant conversation. If you go, "Well, actually, you don't. Yeah. I didn't pay Bitcoin, but you should accept Bitcoin." You can do what you like.
Yeah, you can give them a hard time. Yeah. And then that's how you open the conversation, right? Exactly. I mean, that's a way to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just disruptors.
Yeah, 100%.
You know? And also, you know, I mean, a lot of people work in the supermarket and the checkout, whatever. It's, you know, if you imagine that job, it's a bit tedious, you know? And then having a bit of a break, someone who comes along and puts the laser eyes on your till and has a chat about Bitcoin, it actually makes the day, I would imagine, maybe I'm a bit odd, but I would have thought, actually, that would make my day more interesting as the operator.
Well, it's a story to tell, right? Because it's like, "Hey, did you hear what happened to me at work today?" Or "What happened to me at work today?" Because it's different, right? Because like you said, a lot of people go through the monotony, going through all these point of sale stuff, so...
Yeah,
I mean, I get it, but you guys have been very generous with your time.
Well, before we go,
I missed one thing.
We've got a couple of things. So we're talking about Laser Eyes Card. So you met up with the Bitcoin Racing.
Yeah, I'm staying with them actually. So shout out to them.
Cool, good stuff, Charlie. So we have a Bitcoin Racing Laser Eyes Card. So I'm going to gift you
one of those. It's awesome. Racing.
And I'm gonna give you some gifts. So,
as
you know, we're big tea drinkers here. You've got to have a mug. So you've got to.
I thought it was supposed to be the way around. I'm the guest supposed to get.
So there's a little British Bitcoin mug as well.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's for you to take home. And cool.
Awesome. All right. So quick plug then. Where can everybody figure out where you guys are? Follow along with what you guys are doing. Like maybe check out the UK meetup scene, closest local meetup, that kind of stuff.
Cool. So probably where you can find me, Simon, and James all in one place is Bridge to Bitcoin. So that's bridge2bitcoin.com is the website, or the handle on Twitter is @BridgeToBitcoin. We're on there individually. I'm on Twitter @BitcoinSurrey. James?
I'm @BitcoinShire.
Okay.
But the name of that's Berkshire Bitcoiners, so that's the Berkshire meetup that I run, but it's @BitcoinShire.
And Simon is @HODLSolo, and he runs Bitcoin Events UK.
Okay.
So you can find @Bitcoin Events UK on Twitter, and that's our sort of the hub, if you like, for the meetup theme in the UK. But it's been great chatting. I can't wait to chat some more over dinner.
Yeah, 100%.
This fantastic Bitcoin accepting restaurants.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for your time and being patient with me, bringing the mics, all that kind of stuff, and the gifts. I mean, I gotta come to the UK and interview you guys more often. This is awesome. But I will put all that stuff in the show notes. Everybody should check them out and take a trip out to London. It's been awesome. There's a lot of Bitcoiners out here, and you guys are doing outstanding stuff. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything that you guys are doing for the community and your community as well, because it's awesome stuff. And I'm so glad I was able to talk to you guys.
Thanks for having us on the podcast. Cheers, buddy.
All right, cheers. Let's go. I mean, damn, first time I got gifts from a pod.
Really? He's kidding me.
Yeah, dude.